Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. Cattle ranching has something in common with the sport of boxing. It looks very, very different depending on whether you're observing it from the outside or actually doing it. That truth in large part explains the different views of urban and rural people toward raising livestock, providing stewardship to land, and the role of predators like the wolf. Bryce Andrews, urban-born and schooled in real-life Montana ranching, has written a new book about all that. It's called Bad Luck Way. Bryce, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Thank you for having me.
Summarize your background. Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
Well, I was born and raised in the urban heart of Seattle. My father ran the University of Washington's Art Museum, and my mother is a professional photographer. So I grew up very far away from the world of ranching, but always loved it from afar and took my first chance to get closer to it.
Which was?
Well, the very first chance came through my, a person who later became my atheist godfather, Pat Zents. Pat is a sculptor and a rancher, and his family...
We've had him on the show. He works out of Billings, near Billings.
Yeah, yeah. Their place is up on the bench between Billings and Laurel, sort of.
So you worked for Pat?
Well, I went out there and did my best to help and did get paid a little bit as I got older, but I don't know how much help I was toward the beginning of it.
And that obviously was enough to get you back into it as a young man?
Yes. As soon as I finished up with college, I basically took my first opportunity to find a job in southwest Montana and start working on ranching, which really interested me.
What was your major?
It was environmental studies and writing, and I designed it myself.
And where'd you go to school?
Whitman College.
Now, we had you on the show before, and you were then working in that first ranching job. Is that correct?
That was actually my second ranching job.
Okay. Tell us, just summarize that job.
I ran the Dry Cottonwood Creek Ranch, about a 3,000-acre cow-calf operation in the Deer Lodge Valley for the Clark Fork Coalition.
And it was unusual then because the Clark Fork Coalition is an NGO, correct me if I'm wrong, they're involved in cleanup of the Clark Fork, and it was sort of a demonstration ranch?
Well, the ranch actually included about 4.3 miles of the Clark Fork River, one of the most highly contaminated reaches of the river. So the purpose of the ranch was both to demonstrate a whole suite of sustainable ranching practices and to basically ground truth some things about land stewardship, while at the same time demonstrating that those practices could coexist with the nation's largest Superfund cleanup, and that combination could hopefully be a winning one for local ranches.
Okay, the audience is local ranchers then, a demonstration project, fair?
I suppose so, yeah.
Any idea whether it took or not? You left a year or two ago?
Well, I think these things are always complicated, and I think that we really did make some interesting improvements and some changes, and actually the ranch is now managed by Maggie Schmidt, who was one of my interns and ranch hands while I was there, and I think that she's continued to do some really cool things.
But you might think they're cool. My specific question is whether the ranchers that you're trying to demonstrate what's feasible for, because they are working on a slim margin, as we'll talk about a little later, and might be reluctant to change. Any sense that there's any reciprocal learning going on or not? Is it too early to tell?
There is reciprocal learning going on. I think that one of the things that I had to learn through this experience, and I think Maggie's learning it too, is that there are things which are easy to change on, issues that are easy mm-hmm. to change on, and there are ones that are difficult nearly to the point of impossibility. And I think where the project worked is when we focused on when things where it could be a win-win, say, to save water and also improve the rancher's bottom line. Water, split-season water leasing is an example. We made a deal on the ranch to dry up some of our hay ground in mid-July in exchange for a cash payment that kept water in the river. What we did with that money is then go and buy hay from one of our neighbors. So basically, we were bringing more money into the region, and we were demonstrating something where we weren't losing anything agriculturally because we could replace our lost production but at the same time, we were providing a big ecological benefit to the Clark Fork River.
So how'd you get to the Sun Ranch, a famous ranch, 20-some thousand acres in the upper Madison Valley?
It was actually kind of a long road to that job. I took a trip around the country just after finishing up my undergraduate work at Whitman College. I took train around the country with this Amtrak rail pass and went through Mexico and ended up back at my parents' place in Seattle looking for a job. And I found the Sun Ranch seasonal ranch hand job advertised on the Montana State University Range Sciences website.
So you apply for that job. Who interviewed you?
I applied for the job. I interviewed over the phone with Jeremy Gingrich, who was the foreman at the time. And I remember that one of the qualities that you had to have for that job, Jeremy said, was gumption. He said you had to have gumption.
What did that mean to you at the time? You're a young guy. You're looking for your first ranch job. When they said gumption, what did you think?
I guess I thought it meant everything I wanted to have. I thought it meant having a certain strength of character and having the ability to do a difficult thing and to come out of it still as a decent person.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Bryce Andrews about ranching and his book, Bad Luck Way. Obviously, you got the job. What was it like at first? What struck you about it?
Well, the first thing that struck me about it is that the Sun Ranch, the Upper Madison, is about as different a place from the one where I grew up that a person could imagine. You know, Seattle is characterized by this intense, lush fertility and claustrophobia. You know, there's plants everywhere. You see the sky through little holes in the trees and the sun, if you're lucky, through little holes in the clouds.
Yes, it rains a lot, I hear.
It does. It does that. Okay. But the Madison was a world away from that. You know, the Madison was austere. It was big and dry and seemingly empty when I first got there. So I was struck by the roughness of the land, and I was also struck by the difficult nature of the work, which took some getting used to.
Tell me about it.
Well, the first thing, the first task that I was really set to was about 4 weeks straight of fixing fences, all types of fences, barbed wire, let-down fences, pole rail fences, corrals, smooth wire fences, all that. I spent, you know, very long days walking fences, fixing problems by myself, sort of learning the lay of the land.
So what did you learn from that as an environmental studies and writing major? What did you learn?
I learned in a very firsthand physical sense how wildlife, and in particular elk, use the landscape. If you want to know where the elk run, fix the fences.
How so?
Because they destroy them, and sometimes they are destroyed by them. Huh. You know, I spliced hundreds of wires that elk had broken, and I also cut numerous elk out of the fence, dead elk, that had been twisted up in the wires.
What year are we talking about when you started there?
2006.
I had some dealings with the Sun Ranch, Roger Lang, the owner, and Rich Hewitt, the manager. My recollection would be prior to your time, a lot of fences had been removed and also made more wildlife-friendly. Roger was concerned about wildlife values. So I'm kind of surprised to hear the problem that you ran into.
Well, the problems were mostly on the fences that we couldn't retrofit or couldn't remove.
You mean like along the highway or something?
Yeah, along the highway was one of the big problem areas.
What did you learn about yourself, the work itself? Hard, easy, you're a young guy, urban background, you're out working on fences X hours a day. It's physical work.
I learned that the work was indeed very difficult, but in some ways that's what I came for. Whether I knew it or not at the time, I wanted to be measured against that work, and I wanted to prove that I could do it, and that in spite of where I had grown up, and in spite of the lack of training in it that I had as a kid, that I would be equal to the task.
Were you?
For the most part, I think that I was. Mm-hmm. And I think that where I wasn't, I learned quickly to be.
What was your next assignment on the Sun?
As the summer progressed, as spring turned to summer, the cattle began to arrive. The sun was a seasonal grazing operation, which is to say we grazed a large herd, around 1,400 yearlings, steers and heifers, on contract. Mm-hmm. So the cattle arrived in various bunches between April and May. And as soon as the cattle were there, I began to focus mostly on tending to their needs. So that meant moving them, and it meant stringing up temporary electric fence so that we could do rotational grazing in some of our pastures. And it meant making sure that the water systems worked and all of that.
Okay, now let me ask you this. It might sound like a funny question. What'd you learn about cattle? You hadn't been around them in that kind of close, prolonged interaction.
And I hadn't been around that number of them.
Right,
before,
that's a lot
of
cattle.
The sheer number. And what I found is that there's a lot more to cattle than meets the eye. And they're individuals. I learned that much. But I also learned that there is a profoundly interesting level of herd consciousness that goes on with them. I learned to work with them. I was fortunate to have good teachers who encouraged me to think of moving cattle and working with cattle as a challenge, not just to get them there, but to get them there calmly and quietly and to work with them in a way, to work with them in a way that worked for them.
Now, most cattle work in that country is horseback. Was that true for you?
Yes, by and large. The vast majority of what we did was horseback.
What'd you learn about horses that you didn't know?
Well, I learned that they are also individuals, and that their individual quirks are slightly more significant to you on kind of an immediate level. I had a couple really good horses there. I started with a horse that I was really lucky to work with, this horse, TJ, because he was just level-headed, and you couldn't ruin him, and you couldn't make a mistake big enough to get in real trouble. And then later, as I came to understand the work better and understand the horses better, Jeremy, my boss, was kind enough to let me use his horse, Billy. And I, you know, that's the first horse that I really, really enjoyed working with.
He paid you a serious compliment, letting you ride his horse.
Yeah, that's how I see it.
I cowboyed in the Madison in the 60s, and the rancher said to me when I was totally green, get to know your horse. Someday it might save your life. I didn't know what he meant, but I learned. Did you have the opportunity to get to know your horse? Did it make a difference to you?
I did get to know my horses. I think that one of the things that was tough for me about it was that I came in with a pretty high level of distrust. I had a terrible horse wreck when I was in college. Almost got crushed, and did in fact end up crushing most of my right forearm in a wreck involving a horse that I didn't know. It was the first time I'd been up on that horse, and I was doing the kind of stupid stuff that guys in their late teens tend to do. And I think the thing about the Sun Ranch is I knew it was dangerous. I knew the land was dangerous. I knew the animals around us were dangerous. I knew I'd have to take these horses through bogs. I knew we'd run into bears. And so I had to come from a position of really needing to know how they would react in situations. Just like I needed to understand our dogs, I needed to understand the cattle, and I really needed to understand the wildlife.
Let's talk about the wildlife. And for our listeners that don't know the Upper Madison, this is wild country. This is native bear country, grizzlies, black bear, wolves, cougars, you name it, it's there. That was your first time in that kind of landscape around those kind of animals, is that fair?
It was my first extended period of time there.
Okay.
I had camped in the Upper Madison before.
Yeah. So what was that like, interacting and getting to know these animals? You chuckle.
Yeah, I chuckled because it was a really interesting process. I'm a runner. I like to run. Every day after work, I'd go out running right from the beginning of my time. I remember one night running up on a bench. I saw this antelope out at a great distance on the flats, and sun was going down. It was that kind of low light where it's easy to miss things. And this antelope, I realized we were sort of heading on these, you know, trajectories that were going to intersect. And I thought, you know, surely this antelope is going to figure this out. You know, what else does he have to do except for watch out for predaceous things.
Yeah.
And he didn't. We got closer and closer, and this, you know, we were coming together in the middle of this big empty place, and I realized if I don't do something, we're going to run into each other because for whatever reason, he doesn't see me. And so I guess hearkening back to my city kid roots, we got within 20 feet of each other and I said, "Hey," I yelled at this antelope and he did a double take and sprinted off to the horizon. And that was the moment at which I realized that I could reach out and I could touch the wildlife. I could interact with that world in a way that was totally foreign to me. And it was only later that I learned that the opposite was true as well. Meaning, for example, I was out moving cattle. We were actually looking for strays. We'd gathered a bunch of heifers out of a pasture, and James, my coworker, and I were riding a creek bottom. We were working our way up the bottom, and all of a sudden, James's dogs just went nuts. I mean, they started to whine and make these noises. They weren't growls and weren't barks, but just terror noises. And the horses started getting freaky too. And just about then, we smelled that smell that those of us who know, we know it can only be bear when you smell it. And we knew we were in close proximity. And we found actually a steer that had been either killed or scavenged by grizzlies. Skin had been shucked off like a candy wrapper. I had to get off the horse and cut the ear tag out. And the whole time I just thought the bear was going to burst out of nowhere. And after that, we zoomed back up on the ridge just in time to see the sow and cubs blow out of the timber and head off. And that was the moment I realized that it wasn't just me touching the wild and interacting with the wild. The wild creatures could be significant in my life, too.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Bryce Andrews about his book, Bad Luck Way, and his life as a young ranch hand. Let's talk about the predator issue because it's one of the core polarizing issues between urban and rural perceptions of ranching, and it's a big part of the Sun Ranch. You had grizzlies and wolves. Mm-hmm. What was that interaction like for you? You're husbanding cattle, for one thing, and sometimes grizzlies and wolves like to kill and eat cattle.
It was complicated, and it was messy, and it was bloody, and at times it was violent. I know that I came to that ranch with a deep sympathy for wild animals. And by the time I left, I had an equivalent sympathy for agriculture and for the work of ranching. And those can be two very difficult things to reconcile. We did have trouble with wolves that summer. We lost cattle to wolves and ended up having to kill wolves as well. And that was something I never intended to be part of.
You killed a wolf?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did.
And by the time you killed it, how was it for you? Were you angry at the wolf? Were you regretful? Or what did you think?
Certainly those two emotions you just mentioned were in there. Almost more than anything, I was tired. I'd been sleeping out with the cattle, trying to protect them from the pack for weeks on end, as had the people I worked with. We'd tried all these different things. We'd used flaggery. We'd use non-lethal deterrents like rubber bullets and cracker shells, and you know we'd basically worn ourselves to the bone. But still, I didn't want to do it. You know, I've always understood that wolves are difficult, but I've always kind of stood in awe of them as a creature too. So it was with extremely mixed feelings that I ended up being in a situation where I killed one.
You say mixed feelings, and you've explained the feelings when you came in, the beginning, the sympathy for the wolf. Clearly, something else had developed. You killed the wolf, all right? It was threatening or had killed the cattle you were protecting. The implication is you changed your view in some respect or developed a different balance of your opinions or feelings. Fair?
Fair.
Tell me about the balance or the change on the side of the ranching or the cattle or the legitimacy of it or something like that.
Well, I think certainly there's a basic emotional connection that you develop with these creatures that you're caring for every day, the cattle. I felt a strong responsibility to animals that I felt like we had put in harm's way, not because we wanted to, but just because that was the situation we found ourselves in. At the same time, as that summer progressed, I came to what I think now is a richer and more complex understanding of what coexistence actually means in a situation like this. Because when I went into it, I thought, this is a conservation-minded ranch. You know, we are going to coexist with these wolves, which means smiley faces and butterflies and stuff.
Everybody lives happily ever after.
Yeah, but everybody doesn't. And that's one of the things that was really interesting for me to learn, because you're working with the natural world. And the natural world, to my way of understanding it, always has beauty and brutality as its two fundamental defining characteristics. There's nothing, to me, as beautiful as the sound of elk talking back and forth or the sound of a wolf howling, and there's nothing quite so brutal as a kill, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, a wolf we killed or an elk that wolves tore apart. So you have that duality, and I think that what I learned, whether I understood it at the time or not, is that to function in that landscape, to make a living from that landscape, a ranch hand sort of has to embody both of those qualities and has to function on the same level as the natural world.
I'm reminded of a statement by Gary Snyder, I think, the famous poet and guys lived in the wild for quite a while, or wild landscape. Something close to, at the end of the day, we're all part of the meal.
Yeah.
Now, part of what you just said suggests that in terms of that beauty and brutality, we're part of it. We're not just observing beauty and brutality, which you can observe. You said when we kill an elk, we're doing the killing. What's your sense of that? In other words, our relationship to the landscape. We live in a high-tech world. It's easy to have the belief and the feeling that that's something out there. It's like a picture window. What do you think about that in terms of the urban perspective that comes from that?
I think it dissolves pretty quickly when you spend enough time out there in the natural world. I remember being out there and finding a bigger elk calf that the wolves had just kind of parted out. They weren't done with it. You know, they'd eaten about half of it, and I think I probably ran them off when I rode up. But I remember getting down from the horse and looking at that elk, and I remember having this really visceral moment of reacting to it. I looked at it, and on the one hand, I thought, I am not like these creatures, meaning the wolf. I don't tear things up like this. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I looked at it and I thought, you know, I could cut off a steak. and I sat there. I actually sat there with my pocket knife open because I wanted some elk. And you know, that's part of why we don't get along very well with wolves, because we kind of share a lot of characteristics with them. We like the same animals. We eat the same things.
Very interesting comment, because I've worked with the ranching community for a fair period of time, and you will often hear ranchers talk about the brutality of wolves, how they'll tear an animal apart, in this case, let's say, cattle. And it's a very understandable reaction, but it's also true that those animals are raised and slaughtered, perhaps more humanely, but slaughtered nevertheless in large, large numbers to feed ourselves. It's an interesting comment on what part of the elephant people look at, which raises a question. You said it's the relationship you came to understand is messy and complicated. My sense is we humans like things to be emotionally comfortable. Those words don't fit. We like things that are clean and simple. Seems to me you're saying this ain't it.
No, this is decidedly not it. It's the closer you get to the actual wolves and the actual cattle, the less of a black and white thing it becomes, the more shades of gray develop.
Let me ask you a couple of perspectives. Urban perspective might be, there's a solution, just don't raise cattle where the wolves are and the grizzlies are. Another perspective, a more traditional Western ranching perspective, might be, get rid of the cattle and wolves and you solve the problem. Human needs first. Where do you come down and why?
I guess I think neither one of those works in our modern world. Whether we like it or not, we have a West that's getting smaller. It's getting more crowded. We actually have a landscape that, to my way of thinking, you know, every generation for a pretty long time has been leaving it diminished from the way that they found it. So you have these thinner margins on which to exist. And I think that as we go forward, it's important to understand that, you know, a rancher may not like wolves, and there's no way to, I can't think of a good reason for them to like wolves. There's no reason for it. But here's why they should tolerate wolves. Because as we move forward into a West where water will be scarcer, where land will be scarcer, the ranchers and the conservationists, they have to work together. They have to find common ground here. And I think if there's a reason for a rancher to tolerate a wolf, it's because the wolf is what certain conservationists value in the landscape, and they need those conservationists to work with them if the land is going to be kept open and if it's going to be saved from development, which, by the way I see it, you can live with wolves, you can live with certain losses from your herd, mm-hmm. You cannot live with tract housing if what you want to do is raise crops and raise cattle.
You say the ranching community and the conservation community in this modern world have to work together if they're to protect the landscape from the lethal threat of subdivision. But having to work together doesn't mean people will get it. From a rancher's perspective, I think there's a lot of distrust of the environmental community, and some people in the environmental community might say, we don't value ranching, it ain't natural. What makes you think, or do you think, they actually will work together?
The important thing, if we're going to go forward with this and work together, is that people who are reaching out, whether from the conservation world into the ranching one or vice versa, they have to be honest. They have to be honest with the other people about what they want from the deal. And they have to be sympathetic, genuinely so. They have to do more than pay lip service to what a rancher needs out of the land to survive, or what a conservationist needs out of the land for their purposes. So I think that honesty is important, and I think hard work, the value of hard work can't be overstated in this either.
Which brings me back to a final personal question. The job said you had to have gumption. Did you find it in yourself?
I found something in myself. I emerged from that job with a certain gravity, I think, a certain strength that I didn't have before, and I think I have the work to thank for that, and the people who taught me, and the land and the wild animals too. I don't know if that's gumption, but I think that's what I ended up with.
Bryce Andrews, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground again.
Thank you very much for having me.
And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.